Okay. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does man gain from all his labor, which he toils under the sun? Now I want you to look at that point of view right here in the first part of the chapter. Things done under the sun. So he's talking specifically from the land of the living and excluding the things that are spiritual. This is to look at life only physically. What does man gain from all his labor which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Now, this is the first part. Does Solomon mean here to establish a doctrine saying that the earth remains forever? Does Solomon mean to establish a doctrine here, meaning the earth remains forever? Is that the doctrine? Well, we can go in 2 Peter chapter 3, Revelations chapter 20, and see that this earth does not last forever. We can go to Matthew chapter 5 and see that heaven and earth will disappear, and God's word will not disappear. But he's talking about now from what a man can know. A man knows this, right? There were generations before him, and they died. From what a man can only perceive physically, to him, the earth remains forever. Because there were generations before him, and there's generations after him. And as the generations before him died, he knows he's going to die. And so he knows that the people who come after him will die. So he says generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. So he's not trying to establish a forever doctrine about earth. He's talking about what a man can know under the sun. In other words, only the physical. From what a man can know under the sun, as far as he's concerned, the earth does last forever because generations come and go. The sun rises and the sun sets, and it hurries back to where it rises. This right here should be proof he's not trying to establish a doctrine. Now, when it says the sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises, does the sun really rise? Let's look at what we know as 20th century people. Does the sun really rise? Does the sun really set? And does the sun hurry back to where it rises? No, the sun does not hurry back to where it rises. The sun does not rise and the sun does not set. But it appeared that way, right? So we're speaking with this euphemism. Again, not a trying to establish a doctrine, but man's perceptions. And this is man's perception, isn't it? The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, and yet the sea is never full. You see the tongue-in-cheek here? All the streams flow into the sea, and yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome. More than one can say, the eye has never enough of seeing, and nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Again, under the sun. He says, hey, you know, the water, the rivers enter into the sea. It's constant. It's every day. But somehow the seas are never full. What does this tell you? It's a cycle. The streams fill the sea, and then the rivers are filled back from the sea again. It goes in a circle. And he's trying to show you the wearisome things of life. It goes over and over again. The eye never has enough of seeing. The ear is never its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. People are born and then people die. And guess what? More people are born. And guess what? More people die. It's wearisome. It goes round and round. The wind starts out in the north and goes to the south, and then it comes back again. It's in a circle. And this is the point he's trying to make. Things just go on in cycles. And we can apply this now back to generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. There's nothing new under the sun. It's always been this way. Look, this is something new. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old. Even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. We talked about that the other night when we was talking about it in Ecclesiastes 9. The earth forgets you pretty quick. How many generations of your grandfathers and your grandparents do you remember back? Without a genealogy, you never met half of them. The world has forgotten them. And guess what? If it continues on the same way, you'll just be one more notch in that genealogy tree, and the world will forget you too. There's no remembrance of the men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. You may remember your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, but beyond that, they're gone. And when you die, who's going to remember your great-grandparents? When your children die, who's going to remember your grandparents? You see the point? What is twisted cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I, the teacher, as king over Israel, devoted myself to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under the sun. And this is the key right here to the book of Ecclesiastes. I devoted myself to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. In other words, he's just talking about the land of the living, under the sun, under heaven. He's just talking about the physical. The spiritual is excluded here. We're looking at the physical only for its own merits and its own basis. And Solomon wants to make a point. That if it is only the physical, if it is only the flesh, if it is only the five senses, we're of men much to be pitied. So I, the teacher, was king over Israel and in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless and a chasing after the wind. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow, and more knowledge, the more grief. Now think about this. If it's only things done under heaven, and if it's only things that are done under the sun, if it's only the physical, if it's only the physical life you have to live there, what advantage is there for you to increase in wisdom and in knowledge? What advantage is there for you to go beyond other people? Because then you find out some truths, don't you? And those things are going to vex you. When you discover that life is meaningless and vanity and chasing after the wind, if you only see it from the physical, guess what you find? You find that your life doesn't seem to be worth living because it's pointless. But if you stayed ignorant, you would eat and you would drink and you would be merry, wouldn't you? You would just enjoy the life you have instead of questioning it. So if it is only the physical, gaining wisdom is just adding to your sorrow. Gaining knowledge is just adding to your grief if it is only the physical we have to deal with. So I thought in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure and find out what is good. All right. If this is bringing me grief, knowledge, and wisdom, well, then let's just indulge in pleasure. Let's enjoy life. All right? Let's just enjoy life. If that's all there is what we see, and knowledge and wisdom brings me grief, then let's try to just enjoy it. I'll test you with pleasure and found out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me now with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under the sun during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem, as well as the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. He's really giving himself over to enjoy life here. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work. And this was the reward for all my labor, to enjoy it. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Now think about how poignant that is, how profound. I did everything physically a man could do. I had everything in my hand a man could possibly desire as far as the physical, and yet it was all meaningless. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what was already been done? The guy that comes after me, what's he going to do? I did everything. What's he going to do to add to this? I mean, I did everything that could be done. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Now, what is that fate that overtakes them both? They both die. Whether you're a wise man or a fool, one day the end comes to your life here in the land of the living. One day you will not be in this land under the sun. Now he discovered in the short term, and you know, wisdom is better than folly. But what's the point if they both die? If both of their lives end at the same way at the same time? Then what was the point to being wise? Yeah, I can see wisdom is better. But what was the point if it's only for this temporary life? I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? What did I gain by being wise? I said in my heart, this too is meaningless, for the wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man must die. Think about that. Now, Solomon, we remember him because of what he wrote. But we don't remember him as we would a father, do we? We don't remember him as we would a brother. We don't really know him. We know what he wrote. So is he truly remembered? And even so, in remembering him from what he wrote and the wisdom that he's applied, if it was only this for this life we have hope, what good does it do Solomon that we do remember? What possible good does it do that he left this behind, that we do remember? It doesn't do Solomon any good, does it? if all we have is this life. But we're not talking about that. Ecclesiastes, believe and receive, is written from the point of view of just what is done under the sun. And if we only have a physical life, then everything is meaningless. Ecclesiastes is written from the point of view that everything is only physical, and that there is nothing beyond what we can see. It's written from that point of view for a reason, to show us that if you only live for the flesh, then your life is meaningless. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it's meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to one who comes after me. And who knows whether he'll be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all my work, which I have poured out, my effort and my skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, but then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. You ever run into old people who think, and this is the thing, because a lot of the old people now grew up in the Depression, grew up when things weren't so good, and they pinch a penny till it screams. How many of us know old people that are holding on to things like $100,000 when they're in their 80s? They're holding on to it like grim death. They're holding on to it like this means something. And then they die. And we see how meaningless it actually was. Yeah, that's their security. Think about it. And who knows the people that come after them, whether they'll cherish it in the same way, or whether they'll see it in the same way, whether they'll be wise with it, or whether they'll be a fool. Who knows? You're not here to dictate, are you? You're done. You know, I knew a man who was a very rich man. You know, he had at least $4 or $5 million. He owned a little gas company in this little town in Missouri. You know, he built it up from nothing. But he didn't trust people. He didn't trust anybody. He thought everyone was out to get his money. Which may be true of some people, but it wasn't to the paranoia he had. Everybody's out to take from him. He couldn't trust any of his employees. He double-checked on everything they did. And you know what that cost him? It cost him his health. He didn't trust the accountants. He went over the books. He didn't trust his managers. He went over their books. He didn't trust his own janitors. He went back there and did inventory himself. He didn't trust anybody with anything because they might steal from him. Pretty soon, it cost him his eyesight. And eventually, it cost him his life. His heart failed. Now, who's checking up on his employees? Now who's making sure nobody steals from him? It doesn't matter, does it? You see how that kind of life is meaningless and it's vanity and it's striving after the wind? And this is the point that Solomon's trying to make. If it's only for this life you have hope, you're miserable and you're lost and it'll be over soon. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, but then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get for all his toil and anxious striving? Anxious striving. His fears. His fears. Which he labors under the sun. All his days his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. Sound like that guy was talking about? This too is meaningless. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can find eat or find any enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But in the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This, too, is meaningless and chasing after the wind. We need to understand what he's saying here. If we only look at this life as if it's all it is, that is your reward. And it's a short one. People who try to use this for doctrine about whether or not you have an eternal life or whether about the world goes on forever or doesn't have sorely misunderstood what this book is saying. We're going to stop there and we'll get into chapter 3 the next time, chapter 3 and 4. But so already you start to see the point, don't you? What can you know? What can you really know about what life's purpose is just with physical information? And what does it matter if you're wise physically or a fool? Both of them are going to die if it's just the physical. What does it matter whether you enjoy life and give yourself over to pleasure or whether you work hard? Because you're going to die just like the guy who worked hard, aren't you? What does it matter if you really try to learn wisdom? You're just going to pierce yourself with grief because there's nothing you can do to change your life. If it's only the physical that we have, we're of men much to be pitied because tomorrow we die. And that's why Paul said, well then, if there is no resurrection, let's eat and drink and be merry because tomorrow we do die. All of this is vanity and striving after wind. And we need to examine our lives. Where is your life stored? Where is your life stored? Where is the true meaning of your life? If it's only in things done under the sun, it'll be over soon. And then comes the judgment. Amen?